You're listening to a podcast from Blogging Heads TV.
Hello, Bill.
Good morning, Matt.
Welcome to the DMZ, everybody.
Thursday morning, day after the...
I'm glad we didn't tape yesterday, Bill. We could have taped Wednesday morning, and that would have been a mistake.
I mean, if you're going to have an insurrection, you should check in with us. Let us know. Would it be a good time?
We schedule these things. It would be nice to have an advisory. Although, I mean, I guess in a way they did tell us. We just weren't listening.
That's right. That's right. Actually, I saw someone had a thread in December. Like, you know, they're coming to storm the Capitol. You all realize this, right?
Well, I mean, I think we've heard so much bluster and so much rhetoric that we tuned some of it out, and that's probably a mistake.
I mean, I wasn't thinking about an actual storming of the Capitol. I figured some hooligan behavior would go on. Like most people, I would assume there'd be enough of a police presence that they wouldn't be able to literally breach federal government property.
Yeah, like I wasn't that surprised when they were attempting to breach the gates or whatever. I was surprised when they did it, you know, when they made it inside the Capitol. I was surprised by that.
To think a wall was not able to keep people out.
That's an interesting point, yes. And Trump, of course, there's so many angles to this. Like, okay, so there were IEDs found at the DNC and the RNC that's getting hardly any attention. Four people dead, one of them a woman shot by the police. The three of them had some sort of medical emergencies. I have no idea what that is.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't, not to be charitable to the insurrectionists in any way, it didn't seem like the insurrectionist killed anybody.
Yeah.
You have one insurrectionist in the Capitol building that was shot by police.
There's allegations that the police were like, there's video. I don't know if this is like selectively edited or what to make of this, but there's video of the police letting them through. There's examples of video of police shaking hands or taking selfies with them. So like, and then the police, am I correct? Like they really didn't arrest anybody like yet, at least.
Honestly, I've seen no news this morning. My entire morning was getting my kid out the door and then talking to you. So I don't know what happened.
I basically come in here. Bill, you need to realize what has held this show together. I come in and I throw out like unsubstantiated things I've seen on Twitter. And then you say yes or no. You're kind of ruining the...
I'm not on my A game right now. So I don't know. I have no idea if they're already arrested. Yeah. We know tons of people are on camera.
Some of them were sitting on Nancy Pelosi's desk. Some are behind the rostrum of the U.S. Senate chamber. So yeah, we have plenty of video.
I mean, I don't know to what extent. I mean, there are these images of people letting folks through. We're doing the selfies and that thing, but there are also images of people trying to do their jobs.
Right.
Literally, one person shot an insurrectionist. So it's a mixed story.
Yeah, we know that Capitol Police were, you know, escorting, ushering Mike Pence to safety and protecting, you know, members who were basically locked down in order to shelter in place and the press. So I don't know what to make of that. The other aspects of the story, obviously, are Trump inciting this behavior. And I think that's a pretty clear. You've got, you know, Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz, their whole shenanigans. And then, you know, people like Mike Pence and Mitch McConnell kind of doing the right thing at the last minute. And I guess lastly, is it Mick Mulvaney who resigned today? Somebody resigned, just resigned.
If someone resigned this morning, I do not know.
Let me pull this up. Let me pull this up.
But while you do
You are
that,
really out of it.
I'm seeing now 30 people arrested for violating curfew.
Okay, so you're fact-checking me already.
Yeah.
Let me find out who it was. There's other people are threatening to resign today. Yeah, I think it was Mick Mulvaney, who
It's
resigned.
not who I would have bet on doing the honorable thing.
So, well, I mean, I'm not even sure it matters at all because Trump's behavior hasn't changed. He's not any more reckless today than he was a week ago or 2 weeks ago or even 2 years ago. I mean, he's constantly has been fomenting violence at different times and undermining democracy and the rule of law. And it just the chickens have finally come home to roost, right? Republicans finally lost those two Senate races, and then the mob, the MAGA mob, actually did what he said to do this time.
But how different is the Republican reaction if they had won in Georgia?
That's a scary thing. I think it probably is different. I really do. I think then the calculus is, Trump can't win, but we can win. We're going to keep controlling the Senate. And I think it would have been a little more muted.
We have
What do
to
you think?
tolerate this hooligan behavior
Because
because
it
this is
works.
the only way that we can retain power in Washington. I think there's a clearer sense among, and I wrote a piece about this for the Washington Monthly just before the insurrection. I think the whole Electoral College certification process is showing a divide. It's not really moderate versus conservative. It's rational versus irrational. It's constitutional versus unconstitutional. So in the rational ledger, you have Republicans saying, Trump is not our savior here. I mean, there are people after the November results, various party chairs and the like, saying, we don't need to change. He's expanding the party. We gained House seats. He motivates our base. We if he can't assure the presidential race, that's because things were rigged. That's not his fault. So don't throw him overboard. And now if you can't hold on to two Senate seats in Georgia, it's not even just that because there's some residual bad feeling about him. He's actively sabotaging the race. He's actively telling people that their votes aren't going to count. The rash Republican says there is no reason to hook our wagon to this guy because he
Yeah.
did whatever political positive there is clearly outweighed by the negative, and now that's now combined with he's literally
Yeah,
trying
and I don't
to
give
overthrow the
people who make
government.
that calculation a lot of credit, right? That's not constitutional or unconstitutional. That's winning or,
Yeah, well,
that's based, yeah.
it's I'm not saying it's an honorable calculation, but you'd much rather work with a rational opposition than an irrational opposition. There's some way. I mean, Mitch McConnell wasn't handing out $600 checks because he's got a big heart. He's not the Grinch whose heart grew three sizes that day. He recognized that it would be bad politically to be the one guy stopping these checks before the
Yeah.
election and before Christmas. Now he didn't go as far as to go for $2,000 checks. But
Yeah.
it was a raw political calculation. And so Democrats could say,
By
hey,
the
here's
way,
a guy who
though.
can calculate. I can talk to that guy and get something done.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with that. Mitch McConnell will make deals if and when it benefits him, and now it may. The checks, speaking of which, so much has happened. I'll just say, like, in the past, 72 hours or something, time flies, but the past several days, past week, you've had Trump call the Georgia Secretary of State and try to strong arm him into overturning the election. You had Trump do that crazy rally in Georgia. Then you had two Republican senators lose, throwing, I mean, it's unspoken in our conversation so far, throwing control of the Senate to Democrats. Then you had Trump's rally or speech yesterday, which I think fomented mob violence. And that's like in the last week. And so we tend to forget things, but you just brought up the check. If Trump had, the election was close enough that now I wonder if Trump, instead of, remember he sabotaged, Trump sabotaged getting the stimulus check sent on his watch. If he had actually pushed through and just given Pelosi whatever she wanted so he could send a check out with his name on it, he might have won re-election.
Well, yeah,
this all might be.
Trump is an irrational actor. You know, Trump has certain impulses, some which have semblances of rationality, but he's a too psychologically damaged a person to put it together to actually be a functional politician. That's why, you know, he had one fluky win, barely.
Yeah.
And I think to some Republicans, that's like a shot of heroin. Oh, this high is amazing. This guy could win by trashing all these norms and making liberal heads explode and insulting the media and being politically incorrect. And now some folks like can't get off that fix. And every time you try to replicate it, you never get to that same level.
And you said fluky, and I've thought about this before. You know, in sports, you could have occasionally a team like the Cowboys will win a game they're not supposed to win, and it's like a fluke victory. But then next week, they come out and they show you who they really are and they lose, right?
Right.
In politics, if you win a fluke presidential election, you're there for 4 years. And so Trump was able to, I mean, imagine if, let's use the Cowboys, whatever, insert football team, has a fluke game and they win. If they could then just market themselves and self-promote for 4 years and act as if they were the best team in the world, and there's really no way of telling if they are or not.
Well, it's like
they
won
a game.
The Giants beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl. You know, one fluky Super Bowl win. They get to crow about that the entire offseason.
Yeah, but to make it to the Super Bowl, you have to win 9 or 10 games just to make it into the playoffs, right? Trump had these, I mean, I guess he won the primary. He won a playoff game or whatever. But the point is, he won, and then the midterms were sort of a loss. I mean, you can't really attribute it to Trump, but you sort of can. By the way, he goes around saying he was on the ballot. Did you ever notice that? Mm-hmm. When I beat Stacey Abrams with Brian Kemp, you know, whatever. It's like, I've never heard anyone say that before quite that way, as if they beat so-and-so. Mm-hmm. And so I guess he did lose the midterms. But anyway, my point is he was able to pretend for 4 years that he was this undefeated, invincible team. Well, yeah, like if you have one game and you manage to win that one game, I guess you are undefeated.
But the signs that he wasn't were there the whole time. His legislative output was terrible. He lost the midterms. His approval was always bad. And now you have further evidence in losing the presidential re-election campaign and losing this runoff. So now to the rash Republican, whatever positives he brought are far outweighed. And so even if you are, you know, we have a divide in the Congress with these Republicans. You have a majority of House Republicans maintain the delusion, essentially making themselves complicit with the insurrection. But very, very few on the Senate side. And then those who are on the Senate side, a good number of them are people that want to run for president probably.
Yeah.
And
well, so let me tell you what's one thing that's pissing me off here about this is have you been hearing this, Bill? We really need to understand these protesters. I mean, they feel this is Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz is
hard. And Tucker Carlson, mind you.
Okay, I love Tucker, but I haven't seen Tucker. But I think it's such a bullshit argument. Like, you know, they feel like the election was stolen. And so we have to, you know, make sure that we go above and beyond to, like, let them go through this process. And the same thing, this infantilization of Trump, you know, like he's, like, deal with it, you know? It's like, first of all, put on your, like, big boy pants. Second of all, you know, we're talking about certifying the presidential election. There's not a lot of, I don't think we should have a lot of room for like coddling people's feelings about whether or not someone was elected president or not, right? This isn't like a little league game.
I think it was Dave Weigel that said on Twitter, facts do care about your feelings now.
Well, that's where I was heading next, right? Like, since when are conservatives the people who are going to factor in these soft, like, snowflake emotions, right? Like, we're supposed to be about facts and rash and the rule of law and following reason and all that. And then, you know, I also think, I'm trying to think of where I was headed with this. Well, anyway, go ahead. It'll come to me.
Well, just to be crassly political at the moment, I think there is a calculation on the part of Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, Rick Scott. You know, they were very reluctant to separate from Trump in the first place. And now I suspect they're saying to themselves, I have even more reason to double down because it's less likely Trump can run himself. Because he has damaged himself in this process. It's certainly easier to speak openly and criticize him. We've seen folks do it in the past 24 hours. And we even saw a good number of senators flip away. People that said they were going to challenge certification changed their minds. About, I believe it's 7 total that I'm aware of. Loeffler, the new Tennessee Senator Hagerty, Ron Johnson, Marsha Blackburn, Steve Daines, I'm missing
the
one
Oklahoma
or two.
Guy.
Langford, right? Forgive me if I'm missing one more.
Is it Kramer and Hoeven? Did you mention them?
I don't think they came out and said they were going to challenge certification. Now, Rand Paul, I don't think went as far as say I will vote to object, but everything before the insurrection was this election is fraudulent.
Right.
And then last night he gave the Federalist Congress can't overturn the rule of the states, save our precious Electoral College from the Democrats, which is also a Tom Carr argument, and a few other House members are making that argument. Yeah.
No.
So anyway, we are seeing a difference, a divergence of what does it mean that Trump has weakened himself to Rick Scott, Hawley, and Cruz. I mean, I don't know if they're being this linear about it, but my impression is they're saying, hey, I can be a super duper Trumpist and not have to worry about battling with Trump because he'll probably have to go on the sidelines. And if he didn't go on the sidelines, he just wouldn't have the same amount of juice they did before. And now Marco Rubio, no, everybody else who voted to certify said they were going to before the insurrection, with the exception of Rubio. Rubio had kept his cards close to his vest and then voted to certify after the insurrection. So I don't know if that tipped him over. He just wasn't prepared to say it. But you do have people in the Senate who are thinking about it. Rubio, Tim Scott, maybe Rand Paul. I forget if I'm missing somebody. Ben Sasse, he was very openly against the objection from the first place. So I think it's indicative of the Republican divide. I mean, there's still hardcore Trumpists out there. You still have the majority of the House Republican caucus sticking with it. But, you know, I don't think it's insignificant that 80 Republicans or so in the House didn't do that. I mean, there's still a divide's a divide. So even though it's a majority and it's the majority, it's the minority leader voting to sustain these objections, that's a large chunk of Republicans who didn't. And then those are people that Democrats say, hey, if we got to work on a bipartisan bill, I'm probably going to talk to you because you have your feet on the ground.
What do you think of Pence, and will Trump now do to Pence what he did to Jeff Sessions?
Well, he's going to try. I mean, he's already been attacking Pence publicly. And, you know, I've been saying for a long time that VPs have a great track record in primaries. And, obviously there are exceptions to rules and being trashed by your president might be one of those exceptions to the rule. But Pence could still try to run for president and say, hey, I am by and large a loyal Republican who was even loyal to Trump, but I'm also loyal to the Constitution, the rule of law, and I can expand on what Trump accomplished. So you don't see Pence saying, I mean, Pence is still saying that there is fraudulence and irregularities. He's only thing he's done is literally follow the law. When there wasn't a formal objection with a House member or Senate member, he said, okay, go to your chambers and vote on the objection. When he didn't have a senator, he said, this is not a formal objection under the U.S. code. The objection cannot be entertained. That's literally all he did, and then count the votes at the end of the day. It's
Yeah,
nothing
but
but.
I mean, well, okay, so on one hand, I don't want to give people credit for doing the bare minimum of what the Constitution tells them to do. On the other hand, what if Mike Pence went up there and was, and I don't know, pulls out an alternate envelope of electors and starts saying, we're going to count these instead, or I have decided under the advice of, constitutional experts that I am going to send the certifications back to the states and, for further review, whatever. I mean, like, I can't even, it's hard for me to make up the bullshit
Well,
thing he might have done. But what if he did that?
if he did that, as a literal matter, he would be violating the Constitution. The
Yes.
Constitution says the president of the Senate, which is Mike Pence, shall.
Art Bill, it's Article 12. I wrote my dissertation on this.
It doesn't say that the president of the Senate gets to decide what the votes are. It says the president shall count the votes. And then it says whoever has the most electoral college votes is the president. It doesn't give the person the power to challenge the votes, to
Right, but what
create
if
new
he did?
votes.
What if he
I mean,
did?
if he I mean, if he did, it would have no legal standing. He doesn't have the legal authority to do that. And I think as a political matter, he would damage the advantage that he has right now. I mean, as much as he's in a vice being squeezed by Trump here, his advantage is to say that he is Trump plus. I'm Trump without the craziness. I'm
Or
Trump
Trump
without.
minus.
I can win back some of these right-wing suburbanites because I'm not insane and I will follow the rule of law. So I don't think he really has that much advantage going down the crazy rabbit hole.
So this whole thing yesterday, this is where I get in trouble with our audience, with the liberals and progressives in our audience. But my whole life, I have seen this sort of thing as being on the left. I mean, conservatives, the party, the philosophy of Edmund Burke, who, after the storming of the Bastille and the mob rule in France, wrote Reflections on the Revolution in France, right? And talked about the importance of tradition and institutions and not giving into the passions of mob rule and that sort of thing. And even just during my lifetime and in modern history, in some cases peaceful protests, in some cases, I mean, there was somebody wearing a Guy Fawkes mask at this quotation scare quotes here protest yesterday. Like, this used to be what the left did, like occupy, whatever, sit-ins, riots, protests, all that stuff. That's not what we do. Now, the Tea Party, I guess, was the beginning of this. And I was one of the only conservatives, Bill, who was mildly critical of the Tea Party and what that started at the time. Most people, even still today, a lot of never Trump conservatives think the Tea Party was great. I see it as the beginning of Trumpism.
Well, I
But
think that's
whatever the
right.
case may be, what does it say? This is a radical revolutionary movement. This is not a conservative movement. Like, what does that say?
I think you go back to the Tea Party. I remember James O'Keefe, who's the dishonest propagandist, Project Veritas, always doing those, surveillance videos that are heavily edited to distort, what.
Sometimes he gets, I mean, sometimes I think he gets good stuff, but there were examples certainly where it was
I
misrepresented.
think there are no
When
times he's got a
he
good side. I think every time, every single time, there's a misrepresentation.
I'm not going to defend him. So go ahead.
But I remember he had a blog post after one of his early videos. It might have been his first video that was basically saying he was following the playbook of Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. And he laid out like each one of the rules and like what he was doing with the videos. A lot of these people in the Tea Party were baby boom generation. And I think
that's the thing, man. You hear all this. If you've ever heard like in the old days, like people, radicals on college campuses would talk about the administration like, hey, it's the establishment, man. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's like radical college students talked about the administration, you know, on campus the way that like modern day, we'll call them right wingers, talk about the Republican establishment. It's very similar. It's
right. Weird. And so I think there's a romanticization of these kind of protest tactics that the left has promoted for a very long time. You know, and back in my old book, Wait to Move to Canada, I have a chapter on protesting, and I say, you know, most protests don't work. Most protests are, you know, I mean, you know, Vietnam War protests are sort of the most classic example. I mean, they're romanticized, but they didn't stop the war. War kept going on for a very long time. I think there are certain examples where protests do work. And I say in the book, like, let's look at those examples. What did they do right that the other protests did wrong?
And they're generally peaceful protests by and
that's,
large.
That's correct.
Right?
And I honestly, Rules for Radicals is a great book. I mean, there's a lot of good advice in that book. You don't have to be, you know, a nihilist to recognize good advice. There's good advice in there. But I do think there was a romanticization of the whole notion of that kind of disruption.
Right. But see, I became a conservative because I didn't want to be like those people. That's the whole reason. It's like Adam Carolla says, like, people want me to go to meetings for being an atheist. And he's like, I became an atheist, so I didn't have to go to meetings. Like I became a conservative, so I wouldn't be like those people.
Right.
So why would I then want to be like, let's see how can we be jerks too?
Right.
I don't get it.
So I think because there was a sense that that was the way to upend the Obama administration. And it had some initial success. Although the very first Tea Party actions were to stop the Affordable Care Act, which did not work. The Affordable Care Act is still the law. But there was definitely, you know, base agitation and energization that helped with winning Congress, winning the House in 2010, not enough to win the presidency in 2012. But they got the Senate in 2014. They won the presidency in 2016. So there's enough successes to feel like, let's keep going down this path. This is the way to keep. I mean, part of Rules for Radicals is that you do things to keep your people motivated. And one of the things that Alinsky says is, you know, you repeat the same tactic over and over again, it gets boring, and your people don't show up. So you got to keep it fresh. But one thing that Alinsky also says is that a good leader knows when to compromise. But good leader knows when to take half a loaf and then fight on the next day. So he was not someone who was not a burn it down person. So you got to read the whole book and internalize all of it. But I think like folks on the left, there are folks on the right that kind of took half the book to cherry pick certain things.
But I do think that some of these people. I mean, I'm sure that there are some people pulling the strings, but like, don't you think a lot of these people are just either crazy, unhinged, or sincerely do believe that the election was stolen? I mean, if I believed, Bill, if I truly believed that they were stealing the election from that people were rigging the election in a democratic, you know, in a democracy, they're trying to steal my country from me. What would I do? I probably would do the same thing. Of course, I don't believe that because it's not happening, because I am sane. But if I truly believed what Trump said, then in a way I would be unpatriotic to not do what they did, right? And so, I mean, I'm not sure all these people are following the Alinsky playbook, right? Like the foot soldiers here are not necessarily like following a strategy.
I mean, you know, one of the Alinsky.
Like, this is like was the storming of the embassy in Benghazi like spontaneous or inspired by a video, right? I mean, like, what makes radical? Like, some of these people got on an airplane and flew to like Washington D.C.
because Trump told them to.
True.
I mean, and that's why, like, I don't think you get to play the I don't condone violence, but I still want to object the election. I mean. You can't separate those things.
You probably saw the video or the picture of Josh Hawley like giving the Black Power salute, I guess, to a radical protester yesterday. In fairness, probably before they, you know, busted into the Capitol.
But they are there because people with political platforms told them that an election was stolen. They didn't just make it up on their own. They were fed that information. They were fed information that a logical conclusion would be it's time for revolution.
Yeah.
Because the democracy is being taken away from you. So you don't get to draw a line and say.
And if you don't, you're a coward, right?
Yeah.
You've been called a coward and you're a rhino or you're an enemy of the people or whatever.
I mean,
if you don't.
I mean, we can't really know if Trump is lying or if he believes the lie himself. Yeah. We don't know how far, how delusional he's become.
I don't know at this time, but I do think one part of Trump is that eventually he does believe his own lies. I really do think, maybe not in this case. Sometimes I think he's conning us, but sometimes I think it's the George Costanza.
Right.
It's not a lie if you believe it's true.
And I don't think you can say that for Josh Hawley or Ted Cruz or Rick Scott. Or Kevin McCarthy, for that matter, even though he's not running for president. These guys know that what they're saying is false, and are not complicit in what's happened. Now, you know, the thing that Hawley pushed the hardest is Pennsylvania. If I can get a little wonky, a little legal for a second, I think it's interesting what's happened here. He's trying to put forth the argument that the mail voting law in Pennsylvania was unconstitutional under Pennsylvania's constitution. And people had every right to challenge that in court. And it's a travesty that those cases never got heard on the merits, that they got thrown out without having the merits be considered. And that argument, I mean, so what he's saying there has like some grains of truth to it. I mean, there is an argument to make that the law violated the state constitution. But this is that argument. That argument is that under the constitution, there's a phrase that's offered to vote to describe the voting procedure. And then there was a case.
And what's the phrase?
Offer to vote.
Offer.
Yeah. And there's an 1862 court case that said offer to vote means voting in person and does not allow for mail voting or other types of remote voting. And then there was another court case in 1924 that did the same ruling based on the 1862 precedent. So it's not that it's not literally in the Constitution that says that. There's an interpretation of the Constitution that's old. And, you know, it would not be unreasonable to challenge the law on those grounds if you did the challenge after the law was passed. But what happened was nobody challenged the law until the votes were cast and were counted. And so the court said,
you're saying if they had sued in October
or
September
or when the law was passed by Republicans in the Pennsylvania legislature, they control the legislature. If someone said at that moment, whoa, you can't do that.
Okay, so in Pennsylvania, because I know in some states, these decisions were made not by the legislature, but by...
This was a legislative passed law, Republican-controlled legislature. And if someone didn't like it, thought it would violate the Constitution, you sue as soon as possible. You don't say, well, let's see how this works out for me.
Yes.
And then you, I mean, that's a legal principle. And so the court said, no, there's precedent that you don't get to do that. And so we're not going to get to the merits now, here.
But Josh Holland is just a simple country lawyer, right? He's from the Show Me State. I'm sure he doesn't know. He probably doesn't have the intellectual capacity to grasp these highfalutin.
Was he Yale and Oxford? Is that his education, if I remember correctly? I saw a tweet from, I think it was Mike Sachs, who said that he was 2 years behind Hawley, I think at Oxford, and the law professor said to him, you're not a fascist like Josh Hawley.
So I do want to say this. I want to discourage any think pieces being written by people who went to, you know, somebody ran, there was a USA Today piece, I ran for student council against Josh Hawley. Or, you know, like, we don't, I don't want, please, enough with these people. This is becoming a problem. No more. No mas.
So anyway, I mean, so I think Hawley's read is incredibly thin. And if he had a shred of decency, he would say, okay, you know, I had a thin read to do the charade before, but look what it's caused. I can't do this anymore. But he's clear he's not that person.
Yeah. My wife, my wife did some work for him when he ran for Attorney General of Missouri.
Are you trying
Missouri.
To besmirch your wife on the show?
Sorry. Throw her under the bus. And I went to a Catholic, a big Catholic dinner in D.C., and I sat next to him. He was a nobody at this point. And I sat next to him. This is like 2016, after my book came out. He had read my book, and he basically hated Trump. He was like, just like me. So I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened to the guy.
Well, we know exactly what happened. He thought, this is where the action is.
Yeah, man. So, do we keep it short and sweet today?
Well, I think we should talk about Georgia a little bit.
Okay. Well, I guess one question I would have for you, Bill, is were you surprised that that the votes, you know, you would think people go and they would vote for Warnock and Ossoff, mm-hmm. right? But like Warnock did much better than Ossoff. What do you attribute that to?
He did better. I wouldn't say he did much better. I mean, I checked the numbers late Tuesday night, so I don't know if they've adjusted slightly. But we got over 4 million votes in Georgia, and it's about 18,000 net that are Warnock-Purdue. So it's not a big number. But it is interesting that to the extent that there was a discrepancy, that's where it tilted. And so, I mean, I don't know exactly what the rationale was. My guess is, maybe some of your more rural African Americans who are, maybe on the conservative side, were excited about voting for Warnock and less so about Ossoff. And it's only one spitball theory. I think you'd have to go county by county, precinct by precinct, and see where are we seeing those discrepancies to be able to really, you know, get a handle on that, which I've not done.
Do you think if Trump didn't make that call to the Georgia Secretary of State, do you think that Loeffler and Purdue would win?
I certainly think what Trump did wasn't helpful. I don't know if it was like literally the Fed. I don't know if it was the case that like Loeffler and Purdue were about to win and then it tipped the other way.
I mean, I think I've seen, this is like, you know, so anecdotal, but I've seen like on Twitter, I think Eric Erickson, who lives in Georgia, maybe even put out, like, someone he knows said that like the polling collapsed after that or something or other. So,
I mean, it's harder to know how much stock to put into the polling, but we know this much. The Democratic strategy was to bank early vote. Democrats are giving themselves 30 days to vote. which they took full advantage of, obviously. The Republican strategy is, you know, trash mail voting and get everyone to show up on election day. And so you better really nail it on election day. And the way to nail it on election day would be to put all of your, train all your fire on Warnock and Ossoff. These horrible radical people who are going to turn America into a socialist disaster, we need to keep them out of there and provide a check on Joe Biden, or say, I'll work with Joe Biden and keep us on the straight and narrow, whereas Ossoff and Warnock will take us off the deep end. That's what you want your closing argument to be. Instead, the closing argument was, Raspberger won't steal the election for me. I mean, that's not how you want to close. So
it's a Georgia Republican isn't supporting me, right?
I mean, there just is more. There was more unanimity of purpose on the Democratic side than there was in the Republican side. I mean, the turnout for a runoff was phenomenal.
Whereas, so it sounds like you think Trump's insertion into the race, it wasn't so much that it further motivated Democrats. They were already motivated, but it might have kept some Republicans home or motivate them.
I mean, I believe there's a bigger drop off from Trump, November Trump to January Loeffler Perdue than there is vis-a-vis Biden to Warnock Ossoff. And it seems like, again, I don't have all the numbers at my fingertips, but from what it seems, from what I've gleaned, is that there, it's not simply that Ossoff and Perdue kept Biden vote, although I do think they did a lot of that. They got, I think, some new vote. I think there was some additional black turnout. And I don't think they lost any white suburbanite voter, or at least not significantly.
I mean, it's totally possible that there were people who in November voted Biden Perdue.
Was also Biden Jorgensen. I'm sorry, Biden Perdue. There's also some libertarian voting that you got to think about. But you're correct. I mean, it's probably
what I'm saying is in November, they vote Biden Perdue.
Perdue and Trump had almost the exact same number. So that might have been a little bit of that, but I don't think very much.
You're blowing up my theory.
Sorry.
But my theory was, okay, I could imagine a scenario where people vote, you know, like Biden Perdue, and they see it as a sort of moderate vote. It's a responsible vote. Maybe these are Republicans, like suburban rich Republicans who vote like Biden Perdue because they want to check, they want balanced government or whatever, right? But then they go through like another month and a half or whatever, a couple months of Trump doing crazy things. Maybe they flip and now vote Democrat for Senate. I mean, Trump very well could have driven away some of those people who are just finally fed up with him.
I mean, Perdue and Trump,
plus,
I don't.
And plus, Perdue couldn't, the unstated point, like, Perdue and Loeffler couldn't distance from Trump at all. He wouldn't let them, right? So they had to suck up to him, which would turn off that.
Well, they made that call. But the Trump-Perdue numbers in November were almost identical. And Ossoff had an 88,000 vote drop from Biden. And so some of that, I think, is Biden Hazel, which was the Libertarian candidate, in the Senate race there.
Wait, and what was the Libertarian's name?
In the Senate race, it was Hazel.
Hazel, okay.
So there might have been some Biden Hazel. It might be some Biden
I
voters.
The person's name was Biden Hazel.
No.
I'm like, that would be confusing.
And I think probably some Biden vote just didn't vote in that race, just skipped it. I saw one quote from an African-American voter saying, I didn't vote for Ossoff because I didn't know who he was.
He's basically Mark Zuckerberg.
Right? Kind of, I guess. I think Ossoff started with more money than Zuckerberg.
Well, he just seems like just like a tech kind of nerd. I mean, like the guy who, you know, the guy who play in Silicon Valley, like the guy, like the main guy, like it just, you know.
Well, that's why I think there was a risk for Democrats that a Ossoff-Warnock pairing would not gel. That Ossoff had appealed to suburbanites, but not working class African-Americans. And Warnock might juice black turnout, but turn off white right-wing suburbanites. And instead, they got synergy out of it. I think they were a good team. There was no real issue daylight between them. When Loeffler and Perdue attacked, when Loeffler attacked Warnock for his sermons, you didn't see Ossoff run scared from that. Ossoff kept the focus on Perdue and Loeffler, that they're crooks. Loeffler came with the Klansmen. Warnock,
that was bogus, right? That was unfair.
Well, she did take a photo of that guy twice. So I think it's probably a little extra English to say she was campaigning with him. But after she bumped into him the first time, so they didn't figure out, like, hey, stay away from that guy the second time.
I don't think I would know. Some people are good at faces, and they just take these selfies, and, you know, like, I don't think I would necessarily catch it. But anyway, that seemed a little bit unfair. But in fairness, Loeffler is so horrible. And here's my next question, Bill. Will she go away? Can we get rid of her now?
Yeah, I think her decision to not vote to certify was her saying, I'm done, kids. I'm gonna go count my money now. This was not a good experience for me.
I think she'll get by. I think she's gonna make it, Bill. I don't think she's gonna go broke.
But I think the Warnock story is very, very interesting. I mean, I'm not the person to talk about it. You know, here's someone who had sort of Jeremiah Wright-esque sermon passages, and yet presented himself to the public as a warm fuzzy, loves puppies, don't believe what Loeffler's saying about me.
Yeah.
Got, I think, the African-American vote to rally around him and say, she's not going to attack the black church like that. We're going to defend Warnock. But he didn't take on any true radical left positions on his platform. He wasn't single payer. He wasn't Green New Deal. He wasn't talking about, free Palestine in the campaign, even though they had some comments along those lines as a preacher. He ran a very generic Democrat campaign, as did John Ossoff.
Yeah. I mean,
the most daring position they took was $2,000 checks.
It'll be interesting to see how he governs, right? Remember Kristen Sinema? People thought she was going to be this total radical.
Yeah.
And so far, she seems like she's governed pretty moderately.
Well, I mean, my guess is that, I mean, Warnock is interesting because he's got to run again in 2 years. So he gets tested a lot quicker. But I do think he is, quite progressive in his heart. I don't think he'll be all that inclined to, do Joe Manchin-y kind of things and really lean, do some big breaks with the left. I think Ossoff and Warnock will vote like reliable Democrats. You know, Sinema's a bit more provocative, a bit more willing to throw an elbow to Democrats now. But I think, if there's a Manchin-Romney compromise, I think Ossoff and Warnock are going to be right there to vote for it.
So do you think, speaking of Manchin and compromises, I think there was a sense that Biden got lucky that Democrats didn't win the Senate big as you expected them to.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a sense that Biden got lucky because that would have pressured him to go to the left. And now he could say, look, folks, I'd love to do whatever, but there's not the votes there, does this, but now, surprisingly, I thought Republicans would win at least one of the two. I thought, and I think Donald Trump hadn't sabotaged it, they probably would have. So the question now is, does this help or hurt Biden? Is it better for him to have this very slim Democratic majority, or would it have been better for Mitch McConnell to be the majority leader? What do you think?
Well, this is much better for Biden. But Biden, Democrats controlling the floor is better for Biden than not controlling the floor.
Is it good because it's only a narrow majority?
Yeah, I mean, I think the notion that Biden should go nuclear and cut Republicans out of the deal completely, that's a non-starter argument right now. Joe Manchin and Kirsten Sinema have said flat out, we're never getting rid of the filibuster. It's not a discussion to have. It's not going to happen. So definitely better for Biden to just have that not be a thing, not be a controversy. Now, there is going to be some discussion, should they go for budget reconciliation? And so just for folks to understand, budget reconciliation is a legislative procedure under the Senate rules that doesn't allow for filibusters, but you can only do it under narrow circumstances. You do it once per fiscal year. You have to pass a budget resolution first. That includes reconciliation instructions, and that the instructions say, well, these are the certain issues that can be discussed in a reconciliation. And
thank you again, as an expert on that. I didn't need to be told, but for the audience, I appreciate when you do that.
Now, so there's an argument to say, look, getting 10 Republicans is going to be a bear. Maybe you can get Romney, Collins, Murkowski, Cassidy on something that based on what they did with the pandemic relief bill. But going beyond that for six, where are the six more? Why beat yourself over the head and make your president look like a failure that you can't get these people by setting a bar that you have to get 60 for things? So go make it easy on yourself. What I would argue is finding multiple bills, trying to create a single reconciliation bill that includes three or four or five big ticket things that literally every single Democrat from AOC to Joe Manchin is going to agree upon is not so simple. And you have literally zero margin for error in the Senate. You could lose maybe, what, two or three Democrats in the House, depending on who's not sick that day. That is a very, very hard needle to thread. And if you fail in that, it is 100% your fault. It's just like when Republicans could not repeal Obamacare, it was their fault and their fault only. They could not blame Democrats for it. And so Republicans made a decision in 2017. They passed a budget resolution in a week, which is unusual. They did strictly to have a vehicle to repeal Obamacare. They bet it all right away. And they failed. They had a partial salvation because they did a second budget resolution and a second reconciliation bill with the tax cuts, and they slipped in the individual mandate repeal on that. But the tax cut bill wasn't all that popular in of itself, and so that didn't help them keep the House. They lost it in 2018. So it's just it's not a gimme strategy. And I think Joe Biden knows enough about how legislation works in the Senate to know that's not a great path to take. And so I don't think he's going to take, I mean, they might pass a budget resolution so reconciliation is there as a backstop. That's essentially what Obama did. You know, they got a resolution out pretty early. There was debate over what would be included in that. So they put in their reconciliation instructions they could do healthcare and student loan reform. But there was a push to do climate, and 26 Democrats voted with Republicans say, no, you can't. You can't put climate and energy in reconciliation. You have to get the 60 on that. Now, maybe that wouldn't be the case this time around. They'd have a bit more expansive set of instructions of what they theoretically could do. But I don't think it's going to be a bum rush to do that in a week and try to ram it all through in a couple of months. I think the first order of business is going to be, let's see what we can get with 60 first. And if we can't get stuff done there, and there's something that's particularly pressing and not too controversial that we could get AOC and Joe Manchin on the same page, then we'll do that for those specific things. But that will probably, those will probably be pretty narrow things.
So it sounds like, though, from Joe Biden's standpoint, this worked out pretty much as good, as perfectly as one could.
Pretty much. I think he would rather have to get, you know, six Republicans and 10 Republicans. 10 is a lot. But I do think that what has transpired in the past week makes it a little bit easier. Makes it a little bit easier to go to some Republican and say, look, you know, don't cast your lot in with these radicals and insurrectionists. You got to fix your party and show that you can govern like responsible adults. And I'm willing to meet you halfway on what we do on that regard. I'm willing to give you some wins, but you got to meet me halfway too. I think there's more of a chance of that happening now than there was a month ago.
All right. Well, let's end on a positive note.
All righty. Good to talk to you, Matt Lewis.
Yeah, man.
We will DMZ Zoom tomorrow. We haven't done that in a bit.
Yeah, let's do it tomorrow. We'll have your people talk to my people and we'll set up a time.
All right.
And follow us on Twitter at DMZ Show.
All righty. Talk to you tomorrow and then, and also
right.
next week.
Thanks, guys. See you, Bill.
Bye-bye.